Here we are in the congressional corner with Congressman Peter Welch. And he's, of course, the only congressman, the only one in Vermont. Now you can say, well, how could that be? Well, it's true. He's the only one. They got two senators, one congressman, and he's it. Welcome, Congressman. That makes you very special.
Well, thank you. Well, I think Vermont's very special, so we're happy.
Well, be happy. That's very important. Hey, on a less happy topic, the late John Lewis has been celebrated this week, including lying in state at the Capitol. What are the memories you have of John Lewis?
Oh, they're just thrilling. You know, what's so extraordinary about John, if you're lucky enough to work with him, as I did for 14 years, every 3 weeks or so, I just go sit with him and talk a little bit and just reminisce about what he's been through. And of course, all of us who came, like, he's been in Congress 3 decades. So before I arrived in Congress, I'd read about him at the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And I believe I saw images of that on TV when I was a very young man. And of course, I just remember the stories too. I went down south on my own civil rights tour. We went through Mississippi, where Emmett Till was murdered, and where Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman were murdered. And of course, John Lewis felt a lot of responsibility because he was one of the people who was encouraging those young civil rights workers to come. And of course, he wasn't responsible. It was the Southern vigilantes and Ku Klux Klan were. But he had this incredible heart and gentleness. And, a lot of folks in the civil rights movement adopted nonviolence as a tactic, and it was the right tactic. It was a total way of life for John. And you could see that gentleness in him. And just being around him, you knew you were around history. But the power of his gentleness was just compelling, and it made you settle down. I mean, it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And my special experience with him was during the demonstration on the House floor when the House Democrats were protesting the lack of any progress on gun violence. We were occupying the floor, and it was John Lewis who gave us the fortitude to do it, because that was unusual, crossing lines for sure. But there's a photograph I have that it'll be my most treasured possession of me sitting on the floor, sitting down. John's got his arms around me, and I'm looking at him. Oh, no, America's lost a wonderful, wonderful man.
That's a great story. It's a great. I only had a few minutes with him, but boy, that personality just enveloped you. He was really quite something.
Well, it's true. And what you were enveloped with was calmness and humility. I mean, you knew who John Lewis was. You knew that he got on a bus where he knew it might be torched with him on it. Or when he got off, there would be police who gave authorization to white vigilantes to break his skull because he was black. You knew he was going into lunch counters where people were pouring hot coffee and using chains. And he did that and got beaten. And then he got up and he did it again. And there was, like, not a hint of pride about that. There was not a hint of, do you know who I am? It was like so authentically who he was, and so to his core, that any of us who came in contact with him were just moved. And here's the thing, he was a forgiving man. Those people who beat him, he forgave them. He did not carry a grudge. The burden of anger was much greater than the lightness of forgiveness. That's an aspect to him where he suffered more than just about anybody, and he did not hold the slightest anger towards the people who treated him so cruelly.
Speaking of which, I saw the president being interviewed, I think next to the helicopter, and they said to him, "Are you going to John Lewis's memorial service?" And he said, "No, I'm not going that way." What do you make of that?
You know, he lacks empathy. You know, we've got a situation, Alan, right now where folks are hanging on. A lot of the relief that's allowed people to tread water is expiring, literally this week. We've got folks who put their life savings in starting here in Vermont, like a bed and breakfast. And every time the phone rings, it's a cancellation. We've got these arts organizations like the Flynn in Burlington that are vital organizations in community life, but nobody can buy a ticket. They can't do any performances. We've got parents who are desperately trying to figure out what they're going to do. Should they send their kids back to school? Will the school open? And will they lose their job if they have to have their kids at home and continue homeschooling? I mean, these are existential day-to-day challenges that every citizen is facing. And it's as though the president he can literally get on a plane to go golfing as opposed to just get in a car and go golfing. He has no empathy. So it's an extraordinary display of what I would say is a pretty stunted personality.
Let's talk about COVID, the next COVID relief bill. $1 trillion from the Senate, $3 trillion from the House, and there has to be a compromise. Where do you expect it to come out?
Well, first of all, you were generous in your characterization of where we're at. The House did pass a bill, that $3 trillion package.
That's true.
That it focuses on a state aid, health care, unemployment, getting people back to work. The Senate has not passed a bill. Mitch McConnell, after the House passed its bill, called it a socialist dream. I mean, it's absurd. He didn't give a particular criticism of any aspect to it. He just was dismissive. Secondly, he said that the states ought to contemplate bankruptcy. This is when states have seen their revenues fall off the cliff as a result of the shutdown of the economy. And in the HEROES bill, the state of Vermont would get, in 2 years, $3 billion, which we desperately need. New York State would get billions of dollars that they need. McConnell's answer is bankruptcy. And he's saying he's got, quote, an offer. He doesn't have an offer because he doesn't have a bill. There's fierce division within his conference that he doesn't seem to care to get to a unified position where they can show up with a position, with a bill that got passed in the Senate, and negotiate. So they're nowhere. That's what's really alarming. And the lack of empathy that I mentioned that is characterized by the Trump reaction to what is a real existential crisis that we haven't had in 100 years, he's got the right person leading the Senate and representing that lack of concern for what's really going on with everyday Americans and all these folks who have small businesses that have been their lives and their livelihoods. So, you know, when McConnell has a bill, we'll be in a position to negotiate, but he doesn't have one because the Republicans are unified on one thing and one thing only, and that's cutting unemployment benefits, but they're not unified on anything else. It's really a serious situation that is exhibiting a total lack of imagination and leadership on the part of Senator McConnell.
So where does it all come out?
You know, we don't know yet, but I know where it's got to come out. I mean, this is a once-in-a-hundred-year event, okay? We don't have to finger-point about how the virus got here. It's here. We do have to assess how we've reacted. And what we have to do at the federal government level is two things, and it's really pretty simple. Number one, there has to be national leadership to help our governors, many of whom are doing a very good job, like Governor Cuomo and Governor Scott, on the health response. Trump won't do that. And we've given him the legislative authority and the appropriations, but he's got to do it. And where the federal government has a big role, it's on getting simple testing that can be done like at the point of service with our employers that's simple and immediate. And we did that with other potential epidemics, and the president has not done that. The second thing is the federal government has to be the fiscal backstop. We're the only entity in the only government that has the fiscal flexibility and the fiscal capacity to help folks, to help our businesses, to help our states hang on, treading water while we get to that other side of the pandemic. So we've got to be all in on this. And we had a good start with the CARES Act. That was the $2.5 trillion legislation that Pelosi and McConnell did agree on. But since then, McConnell's been AWOL, and President Trump has. So two things. One, a national response to bring the infection numbers down with testing and pursuing a vaccine and therapeutics. And number two, economic lifeline while we tread water to get to the other side of the infection pandemic.
Now, Peter Welch, we're out of time for this conversation, but we'll be having another one. And so if you just hang on, we'll be there.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Peter Welch from the beautiful state of Vermont, where he is the only congressman.